Paul's House and Storm's House. It's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
I did my best, but I guess my best wasn't good enough.
And you got to put the thingle-a-doo in the boopity-boppity-zoop-zop. I'm Paul.
I'm Storm.
And we're going to talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. Today.
Apparently in the style of Bill Cosby and whatever the hell it was you were singing.
Oh, that's Just Once by that guy that does
songs. By the Just Once guy.
Yeah, the Just Once guy.
Just once, he said, typity-type. James Ingram.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
And you know what? All kinds of James Ingram.
His best was good enough. I thought his best was great.
It was. I'm going to stand up for a second because the door to my studio is not closed. Now it is. But had I not closed it, my dogs would have come tromping in at some point.
I always think of like when your dogs run in, it's like the scene towards the end of A Christmas Story. Like, you've got your turkey all set up.
Yes.
And you've been looking forward to it.
And here come the Bumpus dogs.
The Bumpus dogs are there to eat your recording rig.
Send them in! Bumpuses!
It's Saturday, April 6th, I think.
It's a Saturday recording. How about
Saturday,
that shit?
Saturday.
It is Saturday, April 6th, and this is show 133.
Yeah, it's exciting, isn't it? Podcasting
it
on a Saturday afternoon.
I know. How risky and wild of us.
This is our dedication to you. This is how dedicated we are to providing you with this entertainment.
That's right.
This is how we choose to spend our time talking about bullshit and bumpuses for you. I know that was not an attempt at naming the podcast.
No, but it was a pretty good one.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Let's start with something that you had started to talk about.
Actually, I was even wrong in my initial assessment. I was lamenting before we started the podcast that I didn't have enough room on my desk. I was moving things around, and I realized I was sort of espousing the whitest of white people problems insofar as I have too many computers in this room. And I had said I had 5 computers here in this room. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, I realize now I have 6.
Were you not counting your iPhone?
If you count my iPhone, I have 7.
Jeepers, creepers.
Well, I will run through them. From oldest to newest, I have my oldest PC that I still own, which I have not turned on in about 3 years. And the reason I still keep
is it like a 386 or something?
It
like
is
that?
Not quite a 386. That was actually the very first PC I owned was a 386. I bought
Great
that
machine. Yeah,
I was like, I spent the summer earning money and then went to one of those, you know, those like computer fairs they'll have in a hotel ballroom.
Sure.
Where you spend $5 and you go in and it's all the, you know, different parts and, you know, pieces to assemble. I totally did that with a friend of mine and went and bought a 386 with a 30 megabyte double height hard drive.
Well, fit that into that Bryan Adams song, Summer of 69.
That's right. It was something like that. Anyway, this is a newer PC than that, but this is actually... That PC, my current oldest PC, is the one we recorded the first Paul and Storm songs on, or at least I did.
Wow, yeah.
On my end, back when I was still using Cakewalk.
Was that the computer that we recorded the Battle of the Ballad of the Sneak?
Yes, as a matter of fact, it was.
Which is really the first true Paul and Storm song.
Yeah, yeah. Not originally intended as such, but it ended up being that. In any event, the only reason I keep that computer around at all, the only piece of data I have not extracted from it, is I have a few recordings of my oldest daughter when she was very, very young, singing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star into Cakewalk, which
adorable.
Is an old recording program. And I just never quite got around to somehow getting that off of that computer.
Cakewalk is still around, by the way. I've been looking for a...
Oh, has it?
Yeah, I've been looking for an audio suite for my dad to use. My dad writes musicals. And
right.
He writes all the lyrics and such, and the book, and he has a partner who writes all of the music, but they basically don't usually record, so helping with that. Anyway.
You want to know how old this computer is? It's a Gateway.
Oh, sure.
Remember when they were all the rage?
Cows and glamour and
cows
circuits.
The glamour of cows taking on Dell.
Yeah, no, I guess it was Dell that eventually just basically wiped their butt with them. And now look at where Dell is.
Yeah, look at that. Oh, how the worm doth turn. Anyway, so I've got the very old computer that probably cost me $1,200 or $1,300 back in the day that I keep around in the hopes of eventually extracting. I have to like find a bunch of cables, hook it up to a monitor so I can extract one piece of data off of it, and then I'll probably recycle the thing. Then I have my newer PC, which is in itself probably still about 10 or 11 years old.
So a 486.
Yes, and oddly enough, it is a Dell. Mm-hmm. I have not turned that computer on in at least 6 months.
Wow, this is like Age of Empires or Civilization, where you can sort of track your civilization by the technology, but it's brands.
Totally. Then let's see, in next increasing age, I think I have my old Mac Mini, which did the lion's share of recording for Paul and Storm stuff and podcasts and all of that for the last however many years that's been. It's been some time.
Yeah.
And then I have my old laptop, of which the screen has died, but still works if I plug it into an external screen.
So theoretically functional.
Yeah, it's more than it has actually. I've proven it through physical experimentation. It is
theoretical. In the sense that you wouldn't trot over to that computer to do stuff, but you could.
Gotcha. Know. Yes, this is true. And I don't even know why I keep that around, because I have everything off of that I ever would want. But I think it's probably just affection. It was my first mobile Mac product.
And it's plush, so you can snuggle up with it.
Yeah.
And, comfort plush, yourself.
Plush in so far as compared to, like, the MacBook Pro that is made of titanium or whatever.
No, I meant it's physically plush. It looks like a little stuffed skunk.
Oh, gotcha. Well, I mean, that's what I mean. It's more cuddly than metal because it is plastic.
You mean
it looks like an actual stuffed plush?
that six month period where Apple decided it was going to be all plush?
Yes, yeah, it was the eye stuffed.
That was shortly before they fired the design manager, and the rest is history.
I'm going into way more detail. I'm going into like dad levels of detail of the stuff that I've got. But nonetheless, I have the old MacBook. Then I have my new Mac Mini, which is just recently purchased as of like a week ago, because the old Mac Mini was no longer cutting it hardware. Like, I could no longer upgrade it to the point where I needed to for the recording software that we use. So I have upgraded to a brand new state-of-the-art Mac Mini. The last thing I have is my new MacBook Pro that I bought once the old one died.
Right, and your iPhone.
And my iPhone, which we'll count that as 6.5 computers.
It is a computer, and that's the
thing. It is a computer, but you know what I mean. I'm not using any actual logic to define it as half a computer so much as just it's too damn small to count as a computer.
No, the way I'm gauging it is by the space program and the future that was envisioned by bands like Rush, Styx, and Journey. And
that when they would have their futurist prog rock band meetings.
Yeah, and they'd be like, in the future, there'll be all these computing devices around, and they'll enable us to travel to the stars and meet aliens and love the whole world. And what are we doing? We're doing exactly that. Which I think is great. Styx was right.
Yep. This has nothing to do with anything, but sure. Here is a question.
Uh-huh.
The old flip phones, which you don't really see much of anymore, but like the Motorola Razr was sort of the last big gasp of the flip phone. But that whole era of mobile flip phones, how much do you think that was influenced by the existence of Star Trek communicators from the original series?
I think it's a back and forth thing, because I think the design for the communicators was probably what would be practical,
mm-hmm.
and that it wasn't just a choice of style, though they were definitely cool.
Yeah.
I would say definitely. I mean, I can't imagine any single person on the design teams of the Razor or the StarTAC, you know, or anything like that was not really big into Star Trek. I mean, you get into stuff like designing futuristic hardware and software because you want to see these worlds happen. So I would say definitely
totally
influenced. But I would say there's another wave. It's like you know, those things that come and go and come and go that someone is going to crack the code. And I think I saw one and it hasn't caught fire, but of doing a flip phone smartphone that will actually make sense to do it that way. But I guess the hurdle is the screen size. I think screens will, well, that's the thing. If you no longer need the screen right there, if you can have like a nice projection, like just a box at solid state that, you know, the Google Glass scenario, whether or not it's Google Glass, that then you wouldn't even need to flip anything. And then it would just be an accessory, I guess. I don't know. Maybe it is the end of the line for flips.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me like it was a, you know, beyond the fact that it was cool, it was a space saving move on the part of the flip phone creators, because you no longer had to have a double height phone. You know, you could fold over the screen, and now at this point, you know, the screen is hardy enough, what with Gorilla Glass and screen protectors and all, that you don't really need a protective cover for it. Or alternately, you need one, but they're making you buy it separately.
Right. Well, I suppose it could probably be made cheaper if you, like, it would mean you wouldn't need something as expensive as Gorilla Glass. I'm assuming it's a more expensive material.
Yeah.
But that, you know, people like what they like. Maybe if you had a screen technology that was foldable, that wouldn't leave a crease, then you could have flip phones again, which would be cool.
Right. As soon as they perfect that technology of like flexible screens,
and if you're listening right now and you're involved in that kind of technology, even tangentially, get on that.
Get on that shit.
We need that.
We need some flexible screens.
I'm gonna jump to a recommends. A Paul and Storm recommends.
Sure.
Penny Arcade's Strip Search. All right.
Yep.
Now this is something I only really became aware of after being at PAX East, Penny Arcade Expo in Boston.
Yep.
And I'll preface it by saying, in general, I hate reality shows. I despise them.
Yep.
They're contrived to me. They bring out the worst in people.
That's because they are and they do.
Yeah. And that's the whole appeal. And I hate that. I think it's horrible. But there are some exceptions. Like, I did watch the first season of Top Chef. Where there's actually some skill, some actual, hey, we really want to find someone who's awesome, and it's positive in that regard. And then after that, it becomes rote. After the first season, it's people say, okay, I know if I do this, I'll be that guy, and if I do this, I can be this person, and people just promoting themselves that way.
Right.
So maybe it's because it's the first season of Strip Search, and it hasn't become that, or hasn't had a chance to become that. But I find it to be genuinely positive. The premise is they want to find the next big web comic artist.
Right.
And the prize winner gets a year embedded at Penny Arcade's offices. And Penny Arcade is, you know, as big as it gets in web comics. So that's basically saying, okay, we're going to give you a chance to have a career, an entire life doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an amazing prize. And that they, as you do with the reality shows, they assembled some talented people and with very differing backgrounds, most of them fairly young, and their interactions are very fun. And of course, there's conflict because you have to generate interest and it's an elimination contest. But I found myself becoming very engaged with the people and really wanting to see what they come up with in their art under pressure. So, I guess they're 12 episodes in. They've eliminated, I think, three, maybe four contestants. Three.
Yep.
And I am hooked.
Oh, cool. I have to admit, that's one of those things I've been meaning to get around to seeing and have not yet.
Yeah.
But it's definitely on the list. And the fact that you are endorsing it speaks volumes to me, actually, for all of the aforementioned reasons you have stated.
Well, that's awesome, and that I was so cogent in describing it, which is the greater miracle. Like, if I'm really interested in something, I can go on details for days.
Yep. Again, like a dad.
Yeah, I dadded a bit on that.
Yeah.
And I'm not even a dad. So.
That's I love that we're turning that into a verb, and a very specific type of verb.
That's our new front runner.
It's sort of a cousin of mansplaining.
Oh, I hate that term.
I know, I do too. But I just our friend Josh Kagan has a podcast, and here's a brief recommends. I wasn't planning on, but he has a podcast. We may have mentioned it before, called "Like I'm an Idiot," where he has people on to explain different concepts and things to him, like he were an idiot.
Yeah.
I just listened to one that he did a while back, where he had a friend of his on explaining the term and discussing the term mansplaining.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I really have to say about that, other than Josh Kagan is cool and listen to his podcast. But yes, okay, that works. So a recommends strip search, Penny Arcade strip search. Go seek it out. We'll put a link up on the website.
While we're at it, I do have another recommends.
You're just double dipping into the well. Well, maybe I have a recommends.
I hope you do. Do you have one?
I don't have one at the tip of my tongue, so you go ahead with your second one.
I'll let you think. I'll let you stew on that. This is one, actually, that if you had thought of it, you would probably recommend, and feel free to take this over once I describe it.
Sure.
Hannah Hart, My Drunk Kitchen.
Oh, of course. Oh, Harto.
If you're not already familiar, and I'd be kind of surprised if you weren't already familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's what it sounds like. She does a YouTube segment where she is drunk, and she describes making a
to varying degrees.
Yeah, to varying degrees. She recently did a Doctor Who themed version with our friend Chris Hardwick, which was funny and charming and interesting.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say it's funny because shows like that, like her show, by all accounts, should annoy me.
Mm-hmm.
Or at best, I should not particularly enjoy it. But she has so much, and here's a word that gets overused a lot, but she has unbelievable amounts of charisma.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes a long, long way for this show and for me personally. She is just, she is irresistible. One cannot try, though one might resist her. Or maybe you can, I don't know, but I sure can't. And it's one of those ineffable qualities, he said, using a word from his SAT days, that, you know, you can't teach it, you can't describe it, you can't learn it. It's just something you either have or you don't. And I'm always kind of extremely jealous of people who are born with that, just that innate amount of charisma and charm that just sort of, you cannot help but love them.
Yep. Yep. And ladies, she's single. But yes, we heartily recommend seeking that out if you're not already a fan.
Yes.
That's all the recommends I got.
Sure.
I've got some other notes written, but I feel like we've all learned something today.
I think so. Yeah, it's not a super. Let's see. We went at length learning about the computers in my room.
Yeah,
we talked about a couple of recommends. There's got to be something we can talk about for 2 minutes.
Well, I'll say this: we have more secret projects we're adding on the boil. But
yes,
in case you weren't aware, the one we were talking about last week that we said would come out within the next month, it's out.
Yes.
It is out.
Yes, it is.
It is, in fact,
the lamented star-crossed Shadow War of the Night Dragons musical.
Yes, that John Scalzi had approached us. The whole story is on our website and on Scalzi's website, but we ended up producing this highly meta musical rock opera about.
Yeah, I would say it was game changing, like really challenged the limits of the genre.
Yeah, and groundbreaking. It's already spawning an entire genre. You have long standing artists who are just dropping what they're doing, like from the Rolling Stones, John Mayer, they are all jumping to this platform. But seriously, I had so much fun doing it. Like,
yeah, it was it was a genuine blast. I concur with you heartily.
It seems like everything that we've been doing, they've all been like stretch goals, you know?
Yeah. Wow, I can't believe you're using Kickstarter terms.
How can we not? This is just a big wind up to our big Kickstarter pitch.
Whenever that might be.
Just Paul and Storm stretch goals.
Where... That's right. How are we going to start a Kickstarter that's nothing but stretch goals?
Yeah. Yeah. It's $5 and then like $2 million worth of stretch goals.
Right. Nah, it'll be the buy Paul and Storm each a pack of gum Kickstarter with stretch goals that include like an international tour and
a trip into outer space.
Mounting a $200 million Spider-Man style musical.
We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out at some point. But no, go check that out. The music's on our website. Oh, and the proceeds for the songs are going to two really excellent causes. Mr. Holland's Opus, which is one that Mrs. Storm and I have been contributing to for years, that provides musical instruments to schools, music.
To schools that service, underprivileged youth.
Yeah, like kids who might not otherwise be able to even know about band music or music in general. It's something that more and more is being cut from schools, especially where there aren't as many resources.
It's also being split evenly with First Book, which basically does the same thing, but with books, where it has provided millions of books at this point and educational services to underfunded and schools that serve underprivileged youth as well. They're both excellent charities. And we heartily encourage you to go and purchase our songs, even if you don't like them, because how can you not like kids and music and books?
Especially if you don't like them, because a world where people are making music and reading would just be so phenomenally awesome compared to all the shitty things that people do.
That's right.
Let's just face it. Reading and
like create great. More reality shows.
As long as they're positive, like Strip Search.
Create more reality shows about hicks doing jobs that most people find distasteful.
Oh, you mean the History Channel?
Yes. And TLC.
Yeah, and all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we going to be? Let's do the rundown.
Oh, how about I look that up like I was supposed to do before we started the web thing?
Well,
it's a good thing
that.
I have 9 computers in this room. they've multiplied a bit since we started this podcast. Anyway, we are on May 3rd going to be at the Birchmere in Alexandria, Virginia. Oh, hey, there goes my phone. Anyway, we're going to be at the Birchmere on May 3rd, opening for John Hodgman. We've done that there once before. It was a really great time. Hodgman is just a wonderful live performer. He is a raconteur. That's the closest word I can come to. And I don't mean to overstate the fact, but what he's doing is really closest anymore to the kind of thing that... Mark Twain used to do, in that he's not really doing stand-up and he's not really doing readings. He's coming and giving talks and discoursing on topics.
Go ahead. Restoring the good name of the term humorist.
Yes, exactly. There you go. In the manner of Mark Twain and what's his name? Never met a man I didn't like. Will Rogers.
Yes, Will Rogers.
He is indeed an humorist, and well, I pronounce that with the U in there.
I'm not going to cite any specific examples, but it seems like the term humorist is often applied to just people who aren't funny enough to be comedians, you know.
Right.
Or who, whatever. But the true meaning indeed lies in the likes of Will Rogers and John Hodgman.
Yep. So anyway, we'll be there May 3rd. Then, let's see, May 11th, we're in New York as part of the Thrilling Adventure Hour at the Bell House in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
There's two shows. They are both sold out already. But if you're going to be there, we will be there. We will be on June 1st in our old home base stomping grounds, Jam and Java in Vienna, Virginia.
Yeah.
An early show there starts at 7 o'clock. That's always fun. And as was mentioned last week, It's right next to a Chipotle and a Cold Stone Creamery, which is like the Holy Trinity: live music, burritos, and ice cream.
Reading and music.
Yes.
And then just in the way features, if you're going to be in San Diego for Comic-Con in July, we're doing Woodstock there. Pick up your tickets. They're going fast.
Yeah, it's like already half sold out, and we've barely even talked about the show and haven't announced anybody who's performing in it yet beyond the usual suspects. And as soon as we start announcing people, shit's going to get real.
Yeah, as soon as we get word that we can announce a couple of folks we've been talking to, the tickets going to be snapped up.
Yeah.
And then in the way future and in sort of the more immediate future, public booking for Joko Cruise Crazy is going to open up within the next week or two. We've got our programming monkeys chained to their desks in the cellar.
Yes.
So that's going to be happening soon.
Yes. And that's speaking of things that are going to fill up and have a wonderful time. Joko Cruise Crazy 3 was the most triumphant of the first three. Not that the first two were anything but triumphant, but it just keeps on increasing in orders of triumphal magnitude. And that's a good name for this episode.
Yeah, well, it's cascading fountains of triumph.
Yeah. and we are, through the summer, we'll be performing at a few more cons. We can't officially announce anything yet, but that's coming very soon as well. We'll be dotted into several places across the country, and we are working on some more shows in the fall with ourselves and with friends. Yes. He said ominously, not ominously, because
it's a bit
implies
ominous.
Portent.
It's a bit ominous.
It is a bit ominous. Okay, we'll stick with ominous. You can become a minion by checking out the website.
And we recommend doing that because remember the ominous part? That might involve you.
It might.
But that's the future. But right now I'm Storm.
And I'm Paul.
And we've been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. Crisp and clean, no caffeine. Never had it, never will.
Go do things.